This flash briefing was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Today is Monday, March the 11th, 2019. I'm Michael Morale, Director of Multichannel Content for SMA News Today.
A study found the revised upper limb module is better than the conventional upper limb module at assessing the arm's function in patients with SMA. The study was called Revised Upper Limb Module for Spinal Muscular Atrophy, 12-Month Changes. It was published in Muscle and Nerve. SMA comprises a group of neurodegenerative disorders characterized by the gradual loss of motor neurons and leads to muscle weakness. Motor neurons are the nerve cells responsible for controlling voluntary muscle movement. Over the last few years, a considerable effort has been made to develop new tools to monitor SMA patients' upper limb function. The Upper Limb Module, or ULM, was the first scale designed to assess arms function in SMA patients. These patients were those at the weaker end of the SMA spectrum and from the age of 30 months. However, this scale may not be suitable to assess upper limb motor function in stronger SMA children because of the ceiling effect. The ceiling effect is a measurement limitation that happens when the highest score of a test is achieved, which decreases test accuracy near those values. For this reason, a revised version of the original ULM scale was created, and this was to measure upper limb function in a wider range of patients. It's known as the Revised Upper Limb Module, or ROLM. It has 19 items that reflect various functional domains, and it's graded on a 3-point system. A score of 0 is unable, 1 is able with modification, and 2 is able with no difficulty. In this study, a team from the Fondazione Policlinico Universitario A. Gemelli IRCSS in Rome explored this. They wanted to determine if ROLM would be suitable to assess upper limb function in a larger group of type 2 and type 3 SMA patients. This would be over the course of 1 year. They also wished to establish if the revision of the scale adequately addressed the ceiling effect of the ULM original version. As the study population ranged from patients who were unable to walk to ones that could, they also aimed to identify if there were different trajectories according to functional status. The longitudinal study analyzed clinical data from 114 SMA patients, 60 with type 2 and 54 with type 3. They were all from three national SMA networks in the US, UK, and Italy. Baseline values of ROM scores were significantly different between types. Type 2 was measured at 14.8, type 3 who could walk were 34.2, and those that couldn't walk were at 27.4. Over the course of 1 year, no significant difference in ROM scores were found. The overall changes in the whole group were relatively small. And this was not surprising to researchers, considering the relatively short duration of the study and the slow progression of the disease. And no significant differences in ROM scores were found in different age classes across all three SMA patient groups. The ceiling effect was reached in 11.4% of the whole group and in approximately one-third of the ambulant subgroup. However, the team said it believed that in these patients, the ROM should still be used. This would be to monitor the possible occurrence of future upper limb involvement. In conclusion, the results confirm that the ROM explores a range of functional abilities wider than ULM. It can be used in the broader phenotypic spectrum of SMA, including patients who are able to walk. Further studies are needed to identify categories of patients at higher risk of more substantial changes. When longer follow-ups are done, possible prognostic innovative markers are created. Researchers concluded that studies designed to investigate minimal clinically important differences across ages and abilities will contribute to a better understanding of perceptions of meaningful change during daily activities for patients and families.
Coming up next, perspectives from SMA News Today Forum's moderator, Deanne Runge.
Are you interested in understanding gene therapy? ExploreGeneTherapy.com has helpful information about gene therapy, including its history and how it is being investigated for the treatment of genetic diseases. Visit www.exploreGeneTherapy.com.
Thanks for joining me. My name is Deanne Runge. I'm an SMA News Today Forums moderator and blogger. On this podcast, I'm sharing with you my experiences with Spinraza. Just to give you an idea, I'm 39 years old with SMA type 2. I'll be receiving my 8th dose very soon. Everyone's experience is unique, and I feel it's important for us to share our stories. You may have heard Michael Morale's journey on a previous episode. I vividly remember scrolling through my Facebook feed on Christmas Eve in 2016 and stumbling on an article about this newly FDA-approved treatment for SMA, the first of its kind. Not thinking it would pertain to me, I clicked on the article anyway, and instantly I knew this is something I wanted to pursue. And just over 9 months later, my first dose was scheduled. Going into it, I really didn't know what to expect. I met the interventional radiologist who had studied my CT scan, and he told me they'd be going through the neural forming for the injection. You see, my bulletproof fusion from the early 90s didn't leave any openings for a traditional lumbar puncture, and they need access to your spinal fluid for the injection. He explained that the neural foramen was the natural opening created where your nerves branch out into your legs, and that opening gives them access to the thecal sac that holds your spinal fluid. As with any procedure, there are risks, and to minimize those, they'd be using CT guidance. What I liked about this method is that no surgery was required, and I didn't need to be sedated for the procedure. I know others with complicated spines have gotten their injections with various methods. Some have ports placed surgically, so then they can just go in and have their injection through the port. Some get cervical injections, which is in your neck, and some have had a laminectomy to create a window for the injection. But sometimes, if you have an opening, you can get a lumbar puncture the traditional way. I think it really depends on what you and your doctor are comfortable with as to what method is right for you. So far for me, the procedure has been a breeze. And let me tell you, that's not usually the case with me. If something can go wrong, it typically does. Like when I had my gallbladder removed. I woke up on a ventilator from aspirating, and they nicked a bile duct in the process, all leading to a lengthy recovery. Needless to say, I was a bit apprehensive to have a 5-inch needle heading towards my spine. But what surprised me the most about the procedure is that to reach the neural foramen, they actually go through my side, kind of in your love handle area. But luckily, they numb you up so good that I barely felt a thing as the needle was guided into place. Periodically, the doctor takes a CT image to see that he's where he wants to be. Now, during a couple procedures, when they got close to the nerves, I did feel a zing down my toe, but it was just a momentary jolt. And before I knew it, the Spinraza was in, they had taken the needle out and put a Snoopy Band-Aid over the spot. After the injections, I'm required to lie flat for about an hour, and then I can head home and just take it easy the rest of the day. I will admit, the loading doses are somewhat grueling, as they're done every 2 weeks. But the maintenance dosing is only every 4 months, so once you get past those loading doses, it's much easier. Fortunately, I've not experienced any of the negative side effects like spinal headaches or back pain that can go along with the lumbar puncture. Now, for the biggest question, what results have I seen? Honestly, my results have not been dramatic, but I've certainly noticed a difference. It's difficult to describe, but I would say I have more muscle sensation. Like when I use my muscles more, I can feel more soreness later on. And I consider that feeling kind of reassurance that my muscles are responding to the treatment. Gradually, I've gained 4 points on my upper limb scale of the physical therapy assessment. And in general, I just feel really good overall. That's not to say I don't have my down days, and I really do have to say that closer to the injection date, I do feel that the medication wears off a little bit. But otherwise, I feel great, and overall for me, the benefits outweigh the risks, and I plan to continue treatment until something better comes along. I encourage you to share your journey with us. Head on over to smanewstoday.com/forums and share your story under the Spinraza topic. We'd love to hear from you. Have a great day, and until next time, bye for now.
The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcast and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. And be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. For SMA News Today, I'm Michael Morale, Multichannel Content Director.